And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today, Monday, September 24th, 2012. I'm Doug Hagman. I'm the senior co-host along with my son, Joe Hagman. Folks, you're about to hear 2 hours of unbiased and uncensored news analysis, and in this case, a tremendous guest. This is information that you need to know in these perilous times, folks. We broadcast live each and every weeknight from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And, folks, you can find us on the Internet at HomelandSecurityUS.com. And you can also watch us as well, should you be so inclined. We are simulcast in high-def video on the Christians United Broadcasting Network. And I want to thank each and everyone for joining us.
And a quick show note, this will be the last week for doing two-hour shows. Starting October 1st, we will be doing three-hour shows from 8 to 11 as a regular thing. So
Yes. So we're expanding the program. And with that, too, we're going to be, and again, I don't want to curse this because we're going to be adjusting the video so we can actually use white and black boards and some other equipment that'll help us get our video points across. But that said, folks, tonight I want to tell you something. We've got a very special person. I consider one of the top or one of the leading truth tellers in America. Somebody who tells it like it is. And I just asked her if I could adopt her because she's young enough to be my daughter, but old enough to know the ways of the world. And I'll tell you what, if you haven't heard about her, I can't imagine. Her name is Ann Barnhart. You can find her at barnhart.biz, and she operates a tremendous website with a lot of great information, and she doesn't pull any punches. She is absolutely right on target with everything. Now, her history is in finances. When I say finances, I'm talking about commodity brokerage and futures and a trader in commodities and such. With that, and welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me back, fellas. It's good to be with you.
I'll tell you what, and you are just setting the world on fire with your with your analysis of events, and the reason we asked you on, I mean, one of the things that we've been getting a lot of questions lately, Ben Bernanke, I don't know, arsonist with a book of matches and a can of gasoline, along with Geithner and the entire team Obama, seems to be taking our economy from bad to worse to total destruction and devastation. And we've got a lot of people that are out there saying, you know what? And I don't know, I must have gotten half a dozen emails just today alone saying, boy, if you could talk about what's really going on with the economy, that'd be really great. And of course, that's one of the things that we want to tap into your financial acumen there and prowess to more or less educate us. So, Ann, if that's okay with you, that's kind of where we're going to start. Unless I left out anything about your background that you want to tell people about, perhaps, that I left out?
Well, just the very short story is that I was a commercial hedge broker, a commodity broker, and I wasn't a money manager. I was very pure in the business. I was very old school. My clients were ranchers and farmers who owned the physical commodity. And so my job was to help them use the futures and options contract for their pure function, their pure original function from way, way back in the day, which is using them as forward delivery contracts and risk management vehicles. I wasn't a speculative broker. I wasn't a fund manager. There's this term now that's become very sexy and chic over the last 15 years of hedge fund. That's such a joke. I mean, the people who run hedge funds don't even know what the word hedge means. I was an actual real commercial hedge broker dealing with cattlemen and farmers. So that was my area of expertise. And I, of course, shut my firm down about 2 weeks after MF Global happened, because after that happened, it became glaringly obvious to me that the entire financial system had been destroyed. There was no rule of law. I could not tell my customers that their monies were safe. I knew that my customers could have their money literally swept and stolen out of their accounts, and they would have zero recourse at any moment. And that level of risk to my clients was utterly intolerable. So I shut the firm down, and then I was proved right a few months later when another firm, PFG Best, they did the same thing. They were a Ponzi scheme. They stole $225 million, which was basically half of their asset base. No recourse. John Corzine still walks the streets a free man. In fact, John Corzine, the fellow who was the former governor of New Jersey, was a former United States senator, one of Obama's top fundraisers, was also tapped as being in line to be the next Treasury Secretary in the second term after Geithner. It was thought that Geithner would resign after the first term and that Corzine would be tapped for the second term. That's the guy who was running MF Global. He walks the streets a free man to this day. He has stolen $1.6 billion of customer funds and completely destroyed the financial industry. He will never be touched because he is an oligarch. Look, at this point, you can't fight this. You can't fight the man. I can't protect my clients against that level of criminality that goes all the way literally to the very tip top of the government. So at that point, the only moral solution for me was to shut her down. And I called for everyone else to do the same. And I've been calling for people to get out, get out, get out, get out of the financial markets ever since. Get out now, because these confiscations and this looting, it's just going to get worse. These elections in November are 100% fake. Obama is almost certainly going to get back in, and then it's going to be Katie bar the door. It's going to be confiscation of 401ks, confiscation of private pension funds in order to pay off the unions who have squandered all of their pension funds. That's why the unions were so desperate to get Obama in, is because, you know, like, for example, the SEIU, they have blown their entire pension fund. Their pension funds are only funded pennies on the dollar relative to what is needed, because all of the people like Trumka and so forth who are running these mega unions are just psychopathic criminals. They've stolen all of the union members' money, and they know that if they default on these pensions, that there's a good chance that their union members might literally come after them and kill them. So they had to get Obama in with the explicit direction that, look, once you get in and once you have power, you are going to seize the private pension money and the 401k and IRA money, and that's going to come straight to us, so that we don't get lynched when our own union members figure out that all of their money has been stolen, and it's been stolen by the leadership of the unions. I mean, this stuff is all tied together. The rule of law is dead. The financial system is an utter house of cards. There's no real people left in it. The bulk of the volume that you're seeing at the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ or even in Chicago on any given day is computers. Yep. It's computer algorithms trading with each other in and out of a position in milliseconds. It's completely fake, and it's incredibly dangerous, because as soon as that all stops and goes away for whatever reason, the market's going to go to no bid instantaneously. And what that means is that you'll see the Dow clicking down thousands of points at a time. When these computers all go away, the market goes to no bid. There will be an epic, epic collapse. For the love of God, you have got to get out now while you still can.
All right. One of the biggest questions that we get, and we're going to get right into this, ladies and gentlemen, and because of your near frantic emails and the pace at which we're receiving them, we're going to spare the talk about hypothecation and rehypothecation and all that technical stuff, only because I only half understand it, and it makes people's eyes glaze over. So we're going to talk real life here, real world experience. That one, and I've been getting questions, and I'll give them to you like in a list here, and then we can explain as you will. One of the biggest concerns, based on people emailing me, is it's prefaced usually by saying, mathematically, the dollar has got to endure some sort of collapse or experience some sort of total collapse, mathematically. Okay, what are we going to be using for currency when that happens? Are we going to be trading in beer and Skittles, or are we going to have some sort of other type of currency? That's number one. Number two, I've got people saying, well, I've got a 401k. What do I do with it? Because if there is a financial collapse, or not if, but when, I'm going to be looted. And the third thing, well, let's just start right there. What's your position first on the collapse of the dollar?
I agree with you. It is now mathematically inevitable. There is nothing that can be done at this point. It's like a nuclear reaction. We've reached critical mass. There's no going back. Barack Obama has already accomplished the Cloward Pippen strategy for all intents and purposes. That has been executed. The damage that has been done is so massive and so severe that it cannot be walked back. There is going to be a hard reset. There are going to be defaults. And that's what's terrifying, because if you look at who's on the other side of a lot of the sovereign debt and a lot of the paper in the United States, it's China. And they're not going to take real kindly to having trillions of dollars of debt defaulted upon. But that's the only way out now. In terms of what are we going to be using for currency, it's hard to say. U.S. Federal Reserve notes might persist for a while after a big collapse, meaning cash, paper cash.
Right.
But I suspect that it will have to go at some point to two coinage, two metals, and then quickly what I hope would happen is that somebody would have the stones and the intelligence to secede. If this sort of monumental collapse happened, a Texas, a Wyoming, a Texas, Oklahoma together, something like that, secede, and then they would have to start issuing their own currency. And it's going to be excruciatingly painful. What a lot of people are trying to do is they're trying to figure out a way where they can maneuver themselves to where they quote unquote win in a situation like that. That is the wrong psychological place to be in terms of this. Ladies and gentlemen, none of us are going to win. This is going to be bad on a scale that cannot even be described. And from a theological perspective, I'm fully of the opinion that we deserve what's coming. The best that you should be looking to do is to hold yourself together as best you can. And really, at the end of the day, that's what metal, that's what gold and silver are all about. They're about just holding wealth together when you're in a situation like we're in now. Gold does not produce a return organically. It does not have an interest rate attached to it. It does not produce any return. It is just a stagnant piece of metal. However, when your entire system is collapsing around you, it is holding itself together. It is holding its value. That's just about the best that we're going to be able to hope for. And, of course, you would also want to preposition in terms of getting food, water, long guns, ammunition, if you take medication that you can possibly stockpile, things like that. Just getting ready, assuming that there was just a catastrophic level event where petroleum stopped flowing, food stopped moving, commodities stopped moving, what would you need to survive?
Okay. Now, I was talking to a government informant, if that's the correct term, and that is a correct term, who said this particular person that was overseas when the collapse of the ruble happened in Russia. And to hear him talk about this, it was just an incredible, I mean, some of the situations he described were incredible. But now that said, what would an economic collapse look like, Anne? I mean, do we wake up Monday morning, for those who are not awake, spiritually and mentally and otherwise, and find ourselves, you know, can it happen that fast? Like all of a sudden Monday we're broke, or would it occur in a series of increments?
I would think that, again, this is just speculating on my part, because this has never happened in human history. You can cite things like the collapse in Zimbabwe, the collapse in Yugoslavia, but understand, that wasn't the United States of America. That wasn't the largest economy in the history of the world collapsing. So I would, if I had to speculate, I would say that the collapse would take less than a week. It will be very, very quick. And the thing that will be terrifying is when petroleum stops and energy stops moving. And you're going to see the cities. Most people who live in cities have less than a week's worth of food inside of their home. And, you know, the inner city people being the worst. And then what you will start to see is you will start to see genuine bona fide hunger strike people for the first time in their life, because there are very, very, very few people in the United States who have ever in their lifetime experienced genuine hunger, okay? As in, you go crazy and you'll do anything and you'll start killing people in order to get food. Nobody in this country, by and large, has ever seen that. It was the last Great Depression since we saw actual starvation here in the United States. So I think that the inner cities would start to empty out. There will be looting, flash mobs, people pouring out of the cities into the suburbs, and to some extent trying to incur into rural America, thinking that they could loot and get food and so forth. And then you're going to see just skirmishes. It's going to be a civil war type scenario, except that every urban center is going to be its own discrete theater. And again, this is just all unprecedented. There's not going to be a line like the Mason-Dixon line 150 years ago. It's going to be every urban center as its own discrete theater, which is why you absolutely have to be armed, and you have to be armed now.
Okay. I totally agree with you. Now, all right, so a person right now that, let's say this person, in fact, I talked to one today, who said, look, I've been listening to your show. I know that something is imminent with respect to the economy. I've got 20-some thousand dollars in a pension build-up fund, you know, matching fund with their employer. And they have $10,000, and this is a true case. They got $10,000 in their savings account in a bank, and they've got just a couple hundred dollars in cash. But now the one thing that they did say was they were prepared food wise and the protection for the food. So somebody like that with just financial concerns, what would you advise them to do? And I know you're not giving financial advice, but what would you do in that case if you were that person?
Oh, I'm not scared of crossing any regulators anymore, Doug. So you can take this however you want to take it. Get your money out of the financial system. If you have money sitting in any sort of depository institution, it is completely and totally vulnerable to being stolen out from underneath your nose with zero recourse for you to get it back. Okay, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals just a couple of months ago, just a few mere weeks ago, came forth with a ruling stating that depository institutions could take customer funds, deposits in their company, take that money, re-leverage it to get their own fraudulent loans to do whatever they're going to do, presumably spec trading or whatever it is. And that's what rehypothecation is. Don't be afraid of the big word. See, they're a bunch of Marxists. They're trying to throw everybody off by using these big words. What is rehypothecation? It's stealing somebody else's money and going and getting a loan against that stolen property, using the stolen property as collateral. Guys, that's all it is. And that is what every bank and every financial institution in Western civilization today is doing with your money. Why are they doing that? Because Bernanke and the Federal Reserve have brought into place this zero interest rate environment. And so if a responsible bank or depository institution goes and does the right thing, and let's just say buys U.S. Treasury paper, there's zero return on that because there's a zero interest interest rate market. So now these guys have told themselves, well, it's a zero interest rate market. I have to take these customer funds, and in order to get this return that I've been used to for the last decades and decades and decades since time immemorial, when the economy was healthy and there was an interest rate market, okay, now I have to go take my customers' money and put it into uber risky crap. And read, you know, say, for example, European sovereign junk paper. I have to go invest in European junk paper because that's the only thing that's paying any sort of a return, even though it's uber risky. Your money is at risk. My advice to you is get your money out of all depository institutions, out of all brokerage accounts. Close your 401k, close your IRA, liquidate, get it out, get the money home, and then even beyond that, if you can, if you're in one of these big banks, if you're, you know, if you're in a Bank of America or a Citi or a Wells Fargo, these banks are all completely uber leveraged. They are insolvent multiple times over because they're sitting on all of these mortgages that they're still booking as being worth what the house was originally purchased for at the top of the real estate bubble in 2005, 2006, 2007. If they had to actually mark their assets to the market, all of these banks are not just insolvent, they're insolvent like not safe. And then the next argument beyond that is, well, Ann, what about FDIC insurance? It says right there, all deposits are guaranteed to $250,000. Guys, the FDIC's cash on hand right now is just over $11 billion. Okay, $11 billion. There's between $8 and $10 trillion in deposits in U.S. banks today. If we have a collapse where even just 25% of the banking capacity in the United States fails, the FDIC could cover exactly none of that. The percentage that it would be able to cover is so small that it's basically, for all intents and purposes, zero. The FDIC is a joke. It is meaningless. You have to get over this notion that there is magic infinite insurance and that Big Daddy government is just going to take care of you. If there's a banking collapse and people demand quote-unquote FDIC coverage, where's the government going to get that money? They're going to have to print it. And then the printing of the money will just devalue the dollar even more, cause prices to go up. It's a self-feeding loop. This is why we're saying at this point, it is mathematically impossible. This cannot be walked back. You have to take aggressive, proactive steps now, right now, to get out of this marketplace.
Beautiful. Well, and that's what people are looking for. They're looking for that, shall I say, assurance that they're doing the right thing. I mean, another older lady had sent me an email, and she's actually arguing with her financial investment advisor, saying, "Look, I want to take my money out of my my." Whatever portfolio she has or whatever she has in her portfolio. And he's saying, no, you don't, because you're going to be losing money. And, you know, all the people that are saying this are full of beans. And so she asked me to, of course, I've been talking with her for a while, but she asked, which is why, you know, your information is so important. But is this a result of, Ann, of QE3, this QE infinite, or is it even deeper than that? Keynesian versus Austrian economics, or is this a combination of all that plus the fiat currency that we have, or what the heck caused this?
Great question, Doug. I'm glad you asked it, and this is going to be my crusade now for the next few weeks, guys. This is all 100% intentional. This is not a matter of a disagreement on economic theory between me or, you know, anyone else who's preaching common sense on the internet, like Carl Denninger or somebody like that. This is not a matter of some disagreement in theory between me and a Bernanke. What this is about is second grade arithmetic. Bernanke knows damn well He knows damn well what he's doing. He knows that what he's doing is actively harmful. Again, I'm going to use the term. It's the Cloward Piven strategy. I'm sure you've talked about this with your listeners. Francis Fox Piven and Richard Cloward, back in the 60s, they established this strategy that has been taught as gospel out of these Ivy League communist universities, namely Columbia and so forth. How do you collapse the United States economy? How do you collapse the largest economy that has ever existed in the history of humankind? How do you do something that big? And the answer is that you do it from the inside. You debase the currency and you print, and you run up massive government dependency, massive government spending. You run up deficits and debt to the point where it becomes mathematically impossible, and then the system will collapse on itself, and then we, this elite cadre of these Marxist, communist, godless son of a bitch, evil, wicked people, they think that they're going to be able to establish a tyranny out of the ruins of the collapsed United States. Guys, they're about three quarters of the way there. The economic collapse is inevitable. The only question now is what is going to be the system that arises out of the rubble of the first American Republic, which is already dead. It's been dead for years. We are now existing in an interstitial political space between the death of the first American Republic and then whatever's going to emerge that's going to be the next system of governance. Is it going to be a second American Republic that is based on the Constitution and goes back to the founding principles and the principles of just the rule of law and you know, Christian decency? Are we going to go back to that, or are we now entering into a new dark age for humanity, and is this continent now going to turn into a tyranny? If I had to lay bets right now, it's looking like tyranny to me.
Now, do you say that, Anne, because of the actions, for example, of DHS and, of course, the Obama, you know, his policies, his pedigree or lack thereof, and of course, his actions. I mean, what do you base that that feeling on, or that speculation on?
Doug, sadly, I wish it was that simple. What I'm basing that on is what I see in the average American. We all tend to live in a little bubble because, you know, we're on the internet and we're reading these sites that are aware of what's going on, and we're, by and large, having conversations with other people who are reasonably informed to all of this. Do you guys have any fathom how small of a minority we are?
Oh, yeah, believe me, I do. Hey, talk to my mother-in-law.
Exactly. I mean, and I'm here in Denver in the suburbs. Guys, 99-point-some-odd percent of the people in suburban America have absolutely no idea that any of this is going on. None. They can tell you who got voted off of Ballroom Dancing with the Stars last week and give you a detailed explanation of all of that. The average person in this country couldn't name the three branches of government. The average person in this country doesn't know who the Vice President of the United States is. And then, I mean, ask Joe on the street if they know what was MF Global. Who is John Corzine? You just keep going and going and asking them about simple current events that are of monumental import, and these people have no idea. We are so whipped by the Marxist homosexualist takeover of the media, the schools, the universities, and the religious institutions. There's been massive infiltration of Christianity in this country. And, I mean, the Jews will say the same thing. The Reformed synagogues are awful, too. These people have no idea what's going on. How can you even begin to go through something that will be as difficult and as painful as rebuilding a second American Republic going back to the founding principles if 99% of the populace doesn't even know what's going on in the first place and falls for anything that anybody says on cable TV? It's terrifying.
And it really is. I just watched a Howard Stern YouTube clip a brand new one where he goes out and interviews.
No, I saw it too, Doug. I saw it too. You've got to watch it.
Yeah, and they ask the Obama supporters if they're voting for Obama because, you know, Mitt Romney or because Paul Ryan is his running mate and he's, you know, African-American. They asked him if Obama would ever kill Osama bin Laden. I mean, these people did not even know Paul Ryan was not Obama's running mate. They didn't even know. Some people even thought McCain was still running against Obama. I mean, the level of ignorance and stupidity and willing ignorance and stupidity is astounding. I don't even see how it's possible. I mean, these people are so far gone cognitively from reality. It is scary.
Absolutely. Yeah, and too, one thing I want to interject here or ask you about, I mean, you mentioned something or just kind of glanced through this. You know, we as a country collectively, as a collective, deserve this. And look, I know what you mean, and I think the majority of our listeners know what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't mind, why do we deserve it?
Well, you can start. I can start with 60 million reasons off the top of my head, and that is 60 million children that have been offered on the altar of child sacrifice in this country since 1973 in Roe versus Wade. It has been legalized, it's been sanctioned by the government, and now we dismiss it and are being told that it is all being fully funded by the government and that every tax-paying citizen will be required to subsidize child sacrifice. What do you expect? Have you people never read the Bible? Why don't you crack open the Bible and start reading? And start reading about what God does to countries who enter into cults of child sacrifice. People, you know, they wail and moan, oh, there's so much violence in the Old Testament, and they also try to make the specious argument that the violence in the Old Testament is morally equivalent to all of the violence that's in the Quran. What a crock. The violence that's in the Old Testament, when God is telling Israel to go to war against other nations, it's because those nations have descended into cults of child sacrifice and rampant sodomy. Hello, turn on your television, and what do you see? Rampant, rampant sodomy. Perhaps some of the worst that's been seen since the late Roman Empire, maybe even worse than the late Roman Empire by this point. And this massive cult of child sacrifice, I don't know how many thousand children are murdered every single day in this country. And guys, don't kid yourself. Your tax dollars are paying for a lot of it. We deserve this. We sat by, every single one of us. We've known that Roe versus Wade was the law of the land. We knew where the Planned Parenthood was in the big cities. We knew all of this was going on. And like a bunch of chicken blanks, we sat here and we did nothing. We just said, oh, fiddly-dee, that doesn't have anything to do with me. I don't have to worry about this. I personally have drawn my line in the sand, and now with all of this Obamacare, HHS mandate, every health insurance policy is going to have a $1 a month abortion surcharge attached to it. Hell no. It's on. I'm done paying taxes. Internal Revenue Service, not one more cent. And I ain't kidding. And I've been posting notices from the IRS about them seizing my property on my website. I'm not kidding. Not one more cent. Yeah, what is the choice for me? The choice is pay the tax, offer this pinch of incense to Caesar to fund this cult of child sacrifice, or betray Christ and go to hell for all eternity. That really isn't a choice. And if I'm the only one who does it, which judging by the feedback I get from all the cowards out there who try to justify, oh, it's not my fault. You know, Scripture says, Jesus said, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. Yeah, you're forgetting the rest of that. Render unto the Lord that which is the Lord's. And I'm going to render unto the Lord, and Caesar Obama can go straight to hell. So if I'm the only one who declares a federal tax strike, it doesn't make any difference to me. I pray that the rest of you wise up and join me because, frankly, a federal tax strike is the one and only remaining nonviolent recourse that we have.
only one left. And if you won't do that, then you are 100% guaranteeing that there is going to be blood running in the streets within every one of our lifetimes, and it might be within the next couple of years or even months. If you can live with that on your conscience, then that's fine. You go ahead. I can't. I've got to do something.
Yeah. Dollars going to fund the 4,000 abortions per day. Our tax dollars are going to kill innocent civilians in other countries with unmanned drones and or military force. Our money is being used to commit genocide and murder, and we cannot be a part of that if we consider ourselves part of God's people.
Exactly. And you know, there's three steps to an ideal or to a revolution, if you will, or taking our country back. The first is the waking up of the populace. The second is the civil disobedience, which is really the point where we should be in. And the third is, of course, the physical resistance to the you know, what's taking place. And that said, I'm not sure if we and you've got to go through, or you've got to have the first two in order to get to the third, and you've got to have the first one to get to the second one, and so on. But that said, I'm not sure if we as a country, I think Andy mentioned it, you know, I'm not sure if enough people are fully awake to accomplish this, but we're trying to change that. We're trying to change those numbers.
I got a question.
Yeah,
I'm going to go back
a
few months. We were in Syracuse on business, and I was reading news articles on my phone, and I came across an article you wrote about Mitt Romney, Obamacare, the stance he took, and then the backpedaling he did. And you definitely, like usual, didn't hold anything back.
I love it.
And you just, it was an awesome article. Some people called it a rant, and, you know, it was attacked. But Romney and Obamacare, when Romney came out, and or a spokesman from his campaign came out and said that they could not do anything to take away Obamacare, I'm pretty sure you weren't surprised. What kind of response did you receive from that article? Because if I remember correctly, that really did get a lot of attention.
Well, I think you took on everybody. So
yeah.
Well, there's a tremendous amount of this extremely sophomoric, immature, rah-rah, go team, I'm a Republican, quote unquote, therefore I'm going to cheer for my team and whoever my team's guy is. You know, it kind of occurred to me that this whole cult of sports that we have in this culture, I think that this cult of sports that we have in this culture has fed into this. And what the people controlling the media have done is that they have essentially transferred the realm of politics, not from the domain of ideas and truth and integrity and so forth. They've just turned politics into another sport. And so everybody is expected to pick their team and cheer for their team no matter who's on the team. So, for example, here I am in Denver, and we've just had, you know, Peyton Manning is now the new quarterback in Denver. Well, okay, now he's in Denver, so rah-rah, we're all supposed to be Peyton Manning fans. Whether you are or you're not, I don't care. You know, it goes either way. But there's just this bizarre sophomoric team dynamic. And it doesn't matter how much evidence I put in front of people that Romney is a liar, that he is just a sociopath politician who will say anything. And, guys, I mean anything. He will say anything in order to get elected. He will tell whatever group of people he is in front of what he thinks they want to hear in order to get their support so that he can attain office and acquire power. Romney Care was Obamacare. In fact, Romney's staff in 2009, his gubernatorial staff from the state of Massachusetts, went to the White House, gentlemen, and helped draft Obamacare in 2009. This is how intimately connected and how heavily templated Obamacare is off of Romney Care. Romney Care contained everything despicable that's in Obamacare, including contraception mandates, including completely covered abortion. Romney Care started with a $50 copay for abortion, and then eventually they just did away with the $50 copay. Abortions are now fully covered with zero copay by RomneyCare in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Just go on and on and on down the line. Every aspect of Obamacare is present in RomneyCare, and you expect me to believe that Mitt Romney is going to get into office. First of all, I don't even believe he's going to get into office because it's all fixed anyway. But if he did, you expect me to believe that this man is going to rescind the very thing that he executed himself in Massachusetts? You're out of your mind. And, you know, the same thing goes for the gay marriage. Who was the pioneer, so to speak, of gay marriage in the United States? It was Mitt Romney in Massachusetts. He went before the Log Cabin Republicans, which is a group of gay Republicans, and said, listen, if you guys will throw me your support, when I get in, I will make sure behind the scenes that you get your gay marriage here in Massachusetts. Mitt Romney is the scum of the earth. He has no integrity. He will say anything to get elected. And, you know, again, not to be the dead horse, but I'm not even sure. I look at the gaffes and the horrific mistakes that Obama is making that any decent politician would just jump all over and tear Obama apart on. And Romney's not doing anything. I mean, look at this deal with what Clint Eastwood did with the empty chair, right? I mean, you know, great, great political theater. Gets a meme out there in front of everybody in the United States. And then what is Obama doing this week? Okay, they're having this big meeting at the UN. He won't meet with anybody. He won't meet with Netanyahu. He won't meet with anybody. He's going around and he's going on The View and he's giving interviews to People Magazine and Entertainment Tonight. And what is Mitt Romney doing about it? He's not saying a word. It looks to me, gentlemen, as though Mitt Romney is probably trying to throw this. He's trying to just put forth enough effort to maintain the illusion that these are somehow real, legitimate elections, maintain the illusion of democracy when, in fact, the fix has been in. Obama is making such massive mistakes. His people clearly aren't concerned about re-election. I mean, the mistakes that are being made out there, the lack of effort is just mind-blowing. And then the lack of effort on the side of Romney, it indicates to me that the whole thing is just a complete bunch of theater. And that's terrifying. And again, most people out there, even people that are on our side, quote-unquote, who are on the political right, who are conservative, they're still caught up in this lie of this rah-rah go team. I'm going to go to my Tea Party meeting and I'm going to hold up Mitt Romney signs and by golly, everything's going to be okay. No, people, it's not. It's not going to be okay. You've got to wake up.
Yeah, I agree with you. So who's running the show then, Ann? I mean, if we've got complicity between the two parties or actually the fictitious right-left paradigm, we're a nation run by bankers, essentially.
Pretty much. I mean, the big name that is on everybody's list is, of course, men like Soros. There's men like Maurice Strong. Yeah, I believe it is a cadre of billionaires, currency speculators, and you get into this fraternity of these guys who get into Goldman Sachs, who get into J.P. Morgan, and that gets sent over into Europe and all over the world. And it wouldn't surprise me if Moscow doesn't have a large hand in all of this. I mean, Obama's remark to Medvedev, tell Vladimir I'll have more flexibility after my election. I mean, that tells you right there that something there's some sort of dynamic with Moscow that I think that we can't even begin to appreciate how deep that is. The one thing I do know is that who is not running the country is Barack Obama. Barack Obama is a slack-jawed, mouth-breathing, sodomite imbecile who is a pure puppet front. His wife is also teetering on the precipice of being mentally retarded. Valerie Jarrett, I don't know. I think she's just kind of a useful henchman, but I think she's getting her orders from Soros and from his shadow organizations and so forth. I don't think the country's actually being run out of the White House per se. I think that's just, again, it's all theater to keep people people buying into the delusion that somehow this is still a representative republic and that we are still living in any sort of freedom. We're not. We're already in tyranny. And like I said, the first American republic's already dead. It has been for years.
Right. No, I agree with that. Look, if we have a whole bunch of ropes and some tall oak trees and the time and the opportunity, once everything hits the fan, who should we be looking at? I mean, you know, we're talking treasonous activity here to intentionally tank the economy. This might be a question that we're covering ground that we already covered. But, you know, aside from I guess just let me be clear on one thing before you answer that. Bernanke, as the chairman of the Fed, it knows exactly what he's doing. Is he fall? I mean, he's got to know, right? I mean, there's.
Oh, absolutely, no question. They absolutely know. They know what they're doing. They know that they're doing exactly the opposite. They know that they are accelerating and making everything worse and hastening a collapse. And yes, every one of these people should be in. Well, I'm not going to say in my opinion, because I think that this is pretty clearly an objective fact. These people are traitors. They're traitors against the United States of America, and they are traitors against all of civilization and humanity. Not just the United States is going to be destroyed in all this. The consequences and the fallout to all of this all over the planet is going to be massive. Millions and millions of people are going to die because of this. And I'll tell you this, it's already started. The policies that they've put forth and what they've done to debase the currency and so forth is already resulting in starvation that's going on in other parts of the world. We aren't feeling starvation. All we're seeing right now is food prices going up. But in other parts of the world, why do you think that these riots and so forth are happening in places like North Africa and so forth? A lot of it is the fact that there's already been food shortages and magnified inflation going on in these places as a direct result of the activities of Bernanke and the people who are, and Geithner and the people who are controlling the economy in the Western world. These people are traitors. They've committed massive crimes against humanity. They deserve to be executed after a fair trial, firing squad or hang. Seeing these people hang from the gibbet with the crows eating at them would be justice. And anything less than that, in my opinion, is not going to be sufficient, because if you do not have justice and if you do not punish these people, what you are doing is you are saying, all right, whoever wants to step in behind them and do it again, well, you're more than welcome to do it. You see, the same thing goes for even on a micro scale with somebody like John Corzine. I know it's ironic to call a theft of $1.6 billion a micro event, but relatively speaking, it is. The fact that Corzine walks the streets a free man and is now positioning to start up his own hedge fund, what signal is this sending to the next group of sociopaths and psychopaths who are working at Goldman Sachs in New York? It's telling them, all right, 26, 27-year-old kid, you go be John Corzine. Go do the same damn thing. As long as you grease the palms of the oligarch politicians in power, you'll get away with it scot-free. There will be no consequences to this. And so you see, civilization is doomed. You cannot have human civilization without justice, and the crimes that these people have committed are capital crimes, and therefore justice demands that these people be arrested, tried, given due process, of course, given a fair trial, of course, and then upon conviction that they be executed.
I agree. Now, if this is a perfect world or a perfect country, just to be clear, does the U.S. Department of Justice have jurisdiction over a person like Corzine, or would that fall to another regulatory body or investigative agency aside from the U.S. Department of Justice?
As I understand it, I think the DOJ can basically trump in a certain degree, like, for example, the SEC. If the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, or the CFTC, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, which is actually under the USDA, if they drop the ball, I think that the DOJ, yes, does have jurisdiction to come in and say, all right, we're just going to handle this. I would even argue that the Department of Justice, given the scope of these crimes, should absolutely be involved in this, because these are crimes that are treason. They're economic treason against the United States of America in total. Because if you're stealing the money and livelihood and liquidity of a nation's farmers, you are essentially attempting to commit a de facto act of war against the entire population of the country. Okay, so yes, DOJ, as I understand it, certainly could step in. But, I mean, do you really expect that to happen? Eric Holder is the equivalent of Joseph Goebbels. You're never going to have Eric Holder do anything, because he is absolutely a linchpin of this cadre of oligarchs that have overthrown the country. People talking about, oh, man, we're going to get Holder on Fast and Furious, and we're going to force him to resign. Guys, Eric Holder isn't going anywhere. He's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Eric Holder could murder a baby, cut its heart out, and then, you know, commit a sexual atrocity with its dead body on the front steps of the DOJ with cameras rolling, and the man would never be touched. I mean, it's like writing letters to Hitler complaining about the behavior of Joseph Goebbels, demanding that it's not going to happen. So we're going to have a very hard reset of our government before there will be any more justice applied in this country. No justice is going to come out of the United States government such as it is today, because it is entirely criminal and it is entirely illicit. There's no hope in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Joe and I totally agree. We've been following this for a long time. Folks, you're listening to Ann Barnhart. You've got, folks, bookmark her website. That's barnhart.biz. If you go on homelandsecurityus.com, there is a link to her website. In fact, we are going to make it permanent. This woman has got a lot to say. She also has, and you got a bunch of YouTubes out there. You've got your own YouTube channel, which I love. That's accessible via your website, I believe.
Yeah, there's a link there.
Okay, good. Now, I got to tell you this. We're having some audio difficulties with, I believe it's your Skype. We're up against the top of the hour break. If it's possible, can we inconvenience you? Could we, at the break, give you a call on a landline?
Sure.
Okay, good. We've got that phone number. We'll give you a call right back while we're taking our break. We do appreciate that. So you can go ahead and disconnect from your current Skype, and we'll call you back on the other side. And everyone is very pleased about that. We're getting a lot of good reactions. So thanks, Ann. Okay, so go ahead and disconnect, and then we'll bring you back on the other side. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Hagman & Hagman Report for this, the 24th day of September 2012, Monday, live broadcast, special guest Ann Barnhart. What a lady.
Tremendous guest. I mean, you talk about somebody who won't hold back and who will speak the truth. This is the person you want to talk to. And, you know, she works for the people instead of being another one of these economists or people in the field of economy who are out for themselves, out for their advancement of their careers more so than out for the helping the people, her clients, etc. And she is a person of excellent character, and, you know, as I said, she does not hold anything back. Just briefly before we go to the break, some news from today. In New York, a defiant Ahmadinejad says Israel will be eliminated. Ahmadinejad said on Monday Israel has no roots in the Middle East and would be eliminated, ignoring a UN warning to avoid incendiary rhetoric. Also,
meanwhile, on Letterman, no.
Very important. Pastor Begley did an excellent video on this today. New York City schools give out morning after pills to students without telling parents, and this is a regular practice. 13 high schools have Planned Parenthood inside of their schools. And we might not have time to get into this in this show exactly what they are doing in these schools, but It is very sinister. Also, is Homeland Security working for Monsanto? We have information on that. Also, Congress to cut 9/11 first responder benefits only days after a National Health Care Act was expanded to provide coverage to the 9/11 first responders. This and more with Ann Barnhart on the other side.
And don't forget, folks, tomorrow, Greg Evenson, Wednesday, Stan Dale. And we're also going to try to get Pastor David Langford on here. Hopefully that'll work out well. So, folks, you're listening to Doug and Joe Hagman on the Hagman Report. We'll be right back after this. Visit our website, HomelandSecurityUS.com and CanadaFreePress.com. Thanks for hanging with us. Hi, folks. Doug Hagman here. You might know me as the co-host from the Hagman and Hagman Report, or as a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. If you're like me, you're tired and confused over today's headlines. You just don't know where to turn for accurate, concise information about really what's going on, what's truly going on in today's society. If you don't know where to turn for accurate, well-researched, and properly vetted news, I've got a suggestion. In fact, it's a requirement. Bookmark Canada Free Press. That's CanadaFreePress.com on the internet. It's just not for Canada. It's for news across the world. Judy McLeod, founding editor, has put together a vast array of talented writers like Kelly O'Connell, Daniel Greenfield, Dr. Ilana Johnson-Pau, a lot of guest columnists, very talented writers. Folks, that's Canada Free Press at CanadaFreePress.com. Now mobile friendly, follow on Facebook, because without America, there is no free world.
Survival of the fittest. In any and all situations, survival is your number one priority. That requires being tough and thinking smart. And the folks at Freeze Dry Guy are going to help you do just that. They have the long-range patrol ration entrees, what they call the brick pack. When you're in survival mode, it is absolutely the best item for your survival pack or bug-out bag. You can go farther, faster, and carry more food with the LRP cold weather ration entrees. Not only do these long-lasting, durable entrees help sustain you or your family through the harshest environment or situation, they are by far the most delicious of their kind. No contest. With a variety of tasty entrees, you can't beat the LRP brick packs. Let Freeze Dry Guy help you in your survival situations. Go to freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-FOOD.
And folks, now more than ever, I don't think you could possibly do anything better for your family than to get a hold of the Freeze Dry Guy. The link is on the right-hand side of our website. Contact the Freeze Dry Guy. Tell him where you're at with respect to your food preps. And whoever answers the phone there will walk you through the minefield and keep you, fix you right up. And tell him Doug and Joe Hagman sent you. And while I'm at it, folks, we have a new sponsor to this program, MindRegard.com. MindRegard.com. I got to tell you, they have a food supplement. It's a dietary supplement, I should say, and it enhances cognitive function. It's called nootropic or nootropic, whichever you prefer. But I'll tell you something. My father-in-law has been taking this. He's seen improvement in his memory and cognitive functions as well. And I have to tell you, he was a long way to get to where he's at now. So this had a nearly immediate effect. And when I say nearly immediate, I'm talking like a week and a half, maybe. And it also regulated, it seemed to regulate, because it's the only thing that I could figure out, seemed to regulate my blood sugar and what have you. But I got to tell you, go to mindregard.com. That's mindregard.com for information and for, and don't forget, tell them the Hagman and the Hagman Report sent you.
If you're stumped, you don't know what kind of gift to give to a friend or a loved one, I'm telling you, you must go to 4physics.com. That's the numeral 4, P-H-Y-S-I-C-S.com. This is your one-stop shopping palace. That's the only way I can put it. I could spend easily an hour on this website. Innovative, fun, educational. There are games, books, weather instruments, unique time-telling devices, jewelry, optical devices, laboratory equipment. Let me give you an example. We all know we can tell time with a sundial. You've seen those advertised. Did you know that you could tell time by the stars? At 4physics.com, you can buy a Horologium Nocturnum. This was a navigational device used in the 15th century by navigators at night to tell time by the stars. It's beautifully crafted in the shape of a pendant made of bronze and pewter or gold and silver. Absolutely a stunning gift. I would be proud to give it to anyone. You must go to 4physics.com. Even if you're not stumped, that's 4physics. That's the numeral 4, PHYSICS.com. It's your one-stop shopping palace. Any problems that you have, I don't know what to get Grandpa, I don't know what to get my loved one, that's unique, you will find it at 4physics.com. Please take my word for it. Go to the website, but give yourself a lot of time because you're not going to want to leave 4physics.com.
Hold on to your seats. The Hagman & Hagman flight is now taking off. Doug and Joe Hagman have cleared the runway of TSA agents, jihadists, political crackpots, and global elitists. Now get ready for some real news. Here they are, Doug and Joe Hagman.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number 2 of the special Monday, September 24th edition of the Hagman & Hagman Report. We are joined in our first hour by special guest Ann Barnhart, and she is back with us on another connection as we were having audio distortion problems. Ann, are you there with us?
I'm here. Is this sound better on the landline?
You know something, Ann, I'll tell you. If I wasn't a, if I was a conspiracy-minded guy, I'd be thinking somebody was messing with us.
Nah,
that couldn't be.
I mean, this happens when we have prominent guests on constantly.
And especially when we talk about Obama-related matters. But again, what do I know? But thanks for joining us back, or thanks for coming back with us. Folks, again, bookmark Ann's website. That's barnhart.biz. You can access it via homelandsecurityus.com. We're going to be making her a permanent link. And she's already, first hour, provided a wealth of information. And check out her YouTubes as well, her videos, I should say, on her YouTube channel as well, which is accessible via barnhart.biz. Now, with that, the current situation as it stands right now, we're really on the precipice of a financial collapse. Now, Gerald Celendi's he always says, currency wars, trade wars, shooting wars. Do you adhere to that philosophy? I mean, or is that just, you know, what do you think about that?
Oh, certainly. Certainly. If you read history at all, you know that what we have all lived through here in North America in most of our lifetimes, what I call the Pax Americana, which basically lasted from the end of World War II until, call it 9/11. That Pax Americana is such an anomaly in human history. This notion that all of these people out here in the United States are sitting around saying, oh, that could never happen. There could never be war here. Oh, it will never come to war, no matter what happens in the financial sector. Oh, it could never come to people actually shooting at each other or people dying. Again, this is just all a function of the fact that the Marxists have infiltrated the education system, and now people running around in the United States are not just uneducated, they're contra-educated. Uneducated means you just haven't had any information put in front of you. Contra-educated means that you have literally had your head filled with lies, and that is what has happened to all of the people in the United States. Oh, that could never happen here. Okay, read any history at all. Whenever there is a financial calamity or a sovereign default, and don't think that this is the first time that there's ever been sovereign defaults. Good grief, this has happened throughout human history. How have sovereign defaults been settled? By the transference of physical territory. And you say, oh, that's crazy. That could never happen here. Guys, I'm telling you, the Weather Underground, Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, Obama's political mentors, the people who Obama, you know, lived with and it's presumed who hooked him up and got him into Colombia, took care of him, got him into politics, and are, you know, probably sending sending direction and information into the White House and into Washington. These people were planning from the 1960s that they would collapse the United States, they would collapse the economy and the government, and then what would happen is that the landmass would balkanize and it would be redistributed to the various communist factions. In the 60s, they thought it would be four factions. They thought it would be the Soviets, the Red Chinese, the Vietnamese, and the Cubans. Now, of course, today, Vietnam and Cuba are basically of no importance whatsoever. I could see an attempt at redistributing North American landmass into the hands of the Chinese and the Russians, especially the Chinese, because the Chinese own so much of our debt and so much of our paper. So don't think for a second that this couldn't happen. I would remind you all that there was a ballistic missile launched off the coast of Los Angeles earlier this year. It was almost certainly done by the Chinese. They hushed it up and said, and the Air Force came out and said, oh, that was just a plane taking off from LAX. Like hell, it was a plane taking off from LAX. There are people on the Internet who are aeronautical engineers who are saying, I don't know much in my life, but if I know anything, I know that that was an ICBM that was launched off of a sub. It was not an airplane. These things are in motion. It's possible, and you have a cadre of traitors who are in Washington, D.C., who are doing everything that they possibly can to destroy this country and to hand it over into the hands of the enemies of this country and the enemies of freedom, and that is the Obama regime. I mean, you tell me, if you were to write a fictional novel wherein a group of traitors got into the White House and tried to destroy and parcel out the United States, what would be different in your fictional novel than what the Obama regime has done? How would the narrative be any different at all? The answer is it wouldn't, okay? Again, talking earlier. Go ahead.
No, you're right. It wouldn't be any different. In fact, I'm not even sure I'd go that far with what he's doing. Wow. Okay. I interrupted you, and I didn't mean to take you off a stride. So,
no, that's all right. I was just going to make the point that it's all intentional. Just like we talked earlier in the first hour with Bernanke and so forth about how clearly all of these economic actions are intentional. They are malignant. They are hostile. They are belligerent actions of an enemy of this country. It's not a matter of a disagreement on Keynesian versus Austrian schools of economics, okay? It's the same thing with Obama and all of this foreign policy. It's all intentional. You cannot explain any of this. You can't get your head around it. You can't issue any commentary on it that's even remotely intelligent unless you first start with the correct premise that it's all being done intentionally. This is why and I'm sure you guys are the same way, when I'm reading what I consider to be mainstream websites, like, for example, Hot Air, okay, you go to hotair.com, and they would tell you that, oh, no, we're the alternative media, and we're on the right. That's absolute bosh and nonsense. They're as much the mainstream media as anybody else. They're trying to parse all of these events as if there is no malignant hostility behind any of them. And they're just, how can Obama do this? And how can Hillary Clinton do that? And, my God, how can Bernanke do this? And how can Eric Holder do that? and they're just, you know, wringing their hands and trying to parse these events as if these people are honest, well-intentioned actors who have the best interests of the United States at heart and just have a different means of going about achieving it. This is abject nonsense. You can't parse any of this. You can't have the scales fall off of your eyes and see events clearly until you acknowledge the objective truth that these people are the enemies of this country, and everything they're doing is done in a sense of hostility, destructiveness, and belligerency.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. Well, okay. I know you're not a date setter. I mean, you don't have a crystal ball, nor do we. But certainly, you know, we know the times. We know that the signs to look for. How close do you think we are of toward a financial collapse? I know that's kind of off the path we were just treading. But how far off do you think we are? How much time do we have, do you think?
It could be any day. And on the long end, I would say it's a matter of months, not a matter of years. It's a matter of months.
Wow.
But it could be tomorrow. And, you know, you hear me say that and say, oh, my goodness, that's just awful. Guys, anybody with a brain in their head has seen this coming since 2008. I put my house on the market. I had a big house, and I put it on the market. I literally signed the papers the night that he was elected because I knew this is the end. This is the end right now. They are going to collapse the economy and do massive damage, and they will do it in the first term. They have to do it in the first term. And sure enough, look where we are. I mean, we're days away. It could be any moment with the financial markets. I mean, everybody knows that critical mass has already been reached. The only thing now is how long can the delusion keep going? How long can they keep Europe from going up in flames and outright riots? It's very interesting. There's buzz about a potential military junta in Portugal, and one of the regions of Spain is actually seriously talking about seceding from Spain. That was on the web today. Europe's not going to make it. Europe is going to descend into darkness that is going to be absolutely horrific. And Europe has this whole additional dynamic of having a very intensive Muslim infiltration. They have a physical land connection to the reformed Islamic Caliphate, which, again, that was all done completely intentionally by the Obama regime. You can't look at the so-called Arab Spring and say, well, it just, you know, the Obama regime wanted democracy and it just didn't work out. This has been planned. This has been planned for years. Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, again, bringing up these two people, these terrorists who are Obama's political mentors. Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn were in Egypt in Q4 2010 and January of 2011, before the riots started against the Hosni Mubarak regime. They taught those people how to organize. They taught those people how to use Twitter, how to use Facebook, and Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn fomented the Egyptian riots and the overthrow of Hosni Mubarak, which set in motion the entire quote-unquote Arab Spring movement, which is really just the Obama regime reforming the Islamic Caliphate. Get all of the Muslims underneath one cohesive political unit, use them for a time as your enforcement arm, and then once they no longer serve their purpose anymore, especially in terms of, I could potentially see mounting some sort of an invasion into Europe. Once they've done that, then you turn on them, and then you only have one political system that you need to take over. It's the same thing with Stalin and Hitler. Stalin formed an alliance with Hitler because he wanted to sit back, and he wanted Hitler to basically get all of Europe set up on a platter for Stalin to come in and take over. And if you think about it, Stalin got his wish 50%. He got the eastern half of Europe, which Hitler had originally put together for him. so it's this dynamic of these evil political systems, Marxism and Islam. Remember, Islam is a political system too. It's a case of these evil political systems temporarily allying with each other and using each other, and then when the time is right, they each think that they're going to turn on the other. The Muslims think that they will turn on the Marxists, and that the Muslims will ultimately, the prize that they have their eye on is, of course, Europe. They want to ally with Marxists so that Europe can be destroyed to prime it for a complete takeover by the Islamic Caliphate. The Marxists view it in the opposite mirror direction. They want to use the Muslims, get the entire Middle East and all of the petroleum underneath one political system, and then strike at the head of that one political system, and then the Marxists think that they're eventually going to have complete domination of all of the petroleum-producing regions as well. So, I mean, it's so obvious what's going on. And, again, people are just so uneducated and contra-educated, and also, I think, just so immoral that they cannot see or acknowledge objective truth that's right in front of them.
Good point. And I think, I mean, what we're seeing with Obama, with what you just mentioned, this Arab Spring, is obviously the Islamic Caliphate, but there's this pan-Arab restructuring, I guess, for lack of a better term, and all of this, I mean,
and yeah, what people don't understand is the left-right working for the same agenda,
yeah,
and that Christians and Muslims will have the same fate in the end as the new one world order, one world religion, one world government. We'll have no use for any religion that will not be universal, and obviously the Muslims will not be accepting a universal one, you know, religious god or deity, same way that the Christians will not accept any other god or deity except Jesus. The Muslims are just being used as a tool by the New World Order right now, and when their usefulness and purpose is up, they will be in the same position we are now in our country.
You're partially correct. Absolutely, there's the Obama regime and that cadre of these quote-unquote elitist oligarchs. They hold all of humanity in contempt. They hold anybody who isn't inside of their super elite political class as a vermin. And this is consistent all throughout the history of Marxism, and then even before Marxism, back through history, where you get oligarchies in power that just view the average man as an animal. You're absolutely right. I would disagree with you, though, about the Muslim dynamics. Remember, the Islamic political system itself is so breathtakingly shallow. I think that you would be very, very surprised at how little fidelity and loyalty there is to the Islamic political system itself. What those people follow, what they understand, and what they seek out is power and brute force, which is why we're getting our ass kicked in Afghanistan, because, you know, we've got this whole effete homosexual idea of pacifism and this whole Petraeus-driven rules of engagement and win hearts and minds. That is not how you fight any war, first of all, and it is especially not how you fight a war with Muslims, because all those people understand is brute force. If you go in with enough brute force, let's say, for example, a Marxist Chinese, for example, Chinese and Russian armies come together and march on the Islamic lands, just completely talking hypothetically now, and they go in there and they're brutal and they kick ass. I think you would be shocked at how fast that you could convert the Islamic world to a Marxist atheism, because all those people actually care about is brute power and who is going to take care of me and who's going to see that I'm fed. And I want to be on the side of a winner. Whoever has the most power and the most brute force, that's the side that those people will go with. That is a direct opposition to Christianity. But, and remember, can't make this point enough. At the end of the day, Islam is not a religion. Don't ever forget that. It's not a religion. It's a political system, okay? Christianity is, of course, a true religion. And as history bears out, Christians will go to their deaths read the Roman martyrology. Christians will go to their deaths before they bend their knee to a false god. Now, here's the interesting dynamic. How many true Christians are there left in Western civilization? How many people are willing to die for Christ? Now, and I don't kid yourself. Seriously, think about suburban America, Superfund rock band church, Denzians. Do you honestly believe that these people would die for Christ, would walk to their execution with a peaceful comportment? From the feedback that I get, just from me talking about declaring a federal tax strike, guys, it ain't going to happen. I think that Christianity has been so decimated by the Marxist homosexual infiltration of the 20th century, and the remnant of what remains in Western civilization that calls itself Christianity, namely Superfund rock band church, completely heretical Protestantism, you know, Protestants who just, you know, embrace sodomy and embrace abortion and all this. I mean, that isn't even Christianity anymore. And then also the Catholic Church, which has been massively, massively infiltrated by Marxist homosexualists over the course of the 20th century. If you're going to a mass that's being said in English and not being said in Latin, wow, the odds are high that you are in infiltrated territory there. So how many people in Christendom are really going to fight and die for their civilization? That's what terrifies me. That's what terrifies me. But in answer to your point, Joe, I think that you could convert the entire Muslim world to a Marxist atheism within just a few decades if you marched on them with a sufficiently brutal army, which the Chinese and the Russians could do.
Interesting. Interesting, very interesting.
And I like that
viewpoint. I do.
Yeah, and I
agree with that, I should say.
Yeah. I have a question here from the chat room, financial question. Somebody asked, Anne, is it too late for us to sell our homes, move away, or should we stay where we are, batten down the hatches, and team up with our neighbors for what is coming?
Oh, that so depends on where the person is, how old they are, what the real estate market is like in their certain area. I don't want to give any specific advice to that person because I don't know what their situation is. In general terms, I am not big on the whole idea of running away because there's really nowhere to run away to. There's nowhere you can go where you're going to be able to escape this. So my blanket position is that you probably just need to prepare where you are and, like the person said, start coordinating with neighbors and start getting a plan together of what you're going to do if and when the poop does hit the fan in your local area. But I can't tell you, oh, yeah, just sell your house and then go move to this and such state, because you can't avoid this. I mean, this is kind of the big last stand for humanity. Even if you look back at World War II, there were so many people in Europe who were able to evacuate Europe and come to the United States, come to Canada, come to Australia, and get away from that. This is a completely different dynamic. This war is going to be, it's going to be everywhere, and it's going to be here in the United States, which is the last stand. It's the last line of defense for human civilization. There is nowhere to go. You either stand and fight or civilization is going to be lost. So my mindset is the stand and fight mindset.
I am in 100% agreement with that. I'm not going anywhere. No one's going to take me out of my home. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to fight for it. I will fight for it and die at the end of my driveway if I have to, rather than do anything else. But we have a couple of people who have sent us emails during the show asking, do you see, Anne, any relationship between this the DHS ammunition purchases and the bulking up of the interior forces here, with any relationship between that and the coming economic collapse?
Absolutely, 100% yes. What is it, 1.2 billion rounds of hollow point boat tail? Give me a break.
Right.
that has one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to kill men. And it is illegal under the Geneva Convention. In fact, the illegality of Hollow Point predates Geneva in terms of international warfare. That is all being done for one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to be used here in the homeland against human beings.
Do you expect martial law to be declared here? Here's my scenario. I'm just going to impose this upon you, because in my heart, in my gut, in fact, I have a source within the DHS, pretty high up there, and he's saying, look, they're fixing for a civil war, or I'm sorry, a revolution, not a civil war, but a revolution in this country. And the other thing that my source was telling me is, look at Obama. Does he look like he's worried about this election? Does he look like he's planning?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So let's say Election Day, Obama, you know, I guess it really doesn't matter. I guess ultimately here is when everything comes down, are we going to see people with travel restrictions? Are we going to see people, are they going to go door to door for guns and gold and silver and anything else like that? Or is that kind of wild out there talk?
Anything's possible. History tells us that anything's possible. Recent history tells us that anything is possible. The question that I have regards what percentage of the military here in the United States would be willing to turn arms on their fellow citizens. I think there's a certain percentage that would. The segment of the military that I have the least confidence in by far is the Flag Officer Corps. Anybody above the rank of Lieutenant Colonel is completely suspect in my mind. Those guys are politicians. They have been educated in the service academies by basically Marxists. They have been taught Marxist American self-loathing, and again, you need look no further than David Petraeus for confirmation of that. That business of him being over there in Afghanistan, groveling around, licking those people's boots, talking about the Holy Quran this, the Holy Quran that, the rules of engagement, you know, sending guys out to where they either have no live fire ammunition or have ammo, but they're not allowed to have anything chambered, rules of engagement whereby they are not allowed to engage the enemy until they have full confirmation and go ahead from a lawyer in Washington, D.C. I mean, that tells you right there. There's something desperately wrong with the Flag Officer Corps. Don't even get me started on the fact that Obama, I'm sure we all know and agree, and it's not a matter of agree, it's just a matter of no, Obama isn't eligible to be president and never was. And you've not heard a peep out of the Flag Officer Corps with regards to any of this. Lieutenant Colonel Terry Lakin went and sat for 5 months at the disciplinary barracks at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, because he refused to deploy underneath a man who he knew to be not constitutionally eligible to be commander-in-chief. Therefore, if he deployed, he would then be taking orders from an illegal commander-in-chief, which would put him in violation of Geneva, okay? And Colonel Lakin went and spent 5 months in Fort Leavenworth and walked away from about a $2.5 million retirement pension rather than violate what he knew to be the truth, okay? The upper echelons of the military, I believe them capable of anything. I think that they are politicians at heart. The vast majority of them have the number one concern that they have is A, their salary, and A sub one, their pension. You will get online and look up what the pensions are for 06, 07, 08, 09. I mean, we're talking into the five figures per month, and these guys will do absolutely anything to make sure that that doesn't go away, including support a completely illegal, unconstitutional government. It's the Flag Officer Corps that terrifies me. The average enlisted man, I think we've probably got a majority of those guys on our side, and they wouldn't shoot into a gathering of civilians. the Flag Officer Corps, who, let's be honest, it's the Flag Officer Corps who's going to be directing the drones and so forth, okay? Those are the guys that I worry about.
Do you, what about the United Nations troops here or the troops from foreign countries? It seems like every time I pick up a newspaper, we've got foreign troops training here on American soil. Any thoughts about that in terms of
absolute precedence for this? If you haven't seen it, or if your listeners haven't seen, I did a 4-part presentation. It's on my YouTube channel on the Vendée genocide. The Vendée is a region of France. And there was a genocide there during the French Revolution, which, remember, the French Revolution was proto-Marxist. It was absolutely seminal in terms of forming Marx himself and then eventually informing all of the other Marxist revolutions that happened in the 19th and early 20th century. So you look at what happened in the Vendée region of France and what the proto-Marxist French revolutionaries did, and one of the things that they did was they brought in mercenaries. They brought in Hessians. They also conscripted mercenaries out of the prison system. And again, if you don't see the connection between that and what's going on today, you're absolutely right. There have been Russians at Fort Carson, which is just south of me. There's been a large contingent of Russians down there, UN troops, and then also this business of allying with black nationalist groups, Islamic nationalist groups like the New Black Panther Party, and also the Obama regime through Holder is in direct partnership and contact with the Mexican narco drug gangs. What do you think Fast and Furious was? And you think that stuff isn't continuing to go on? I mean, they've entered into explicit relationships with Latin American groups. So do I think that there could be mercenaries being brought in now, put into place, who the regime knows would fire on American civilians without hesitation? Of course I believe that that's possible.
Wow. Man, I'll tell you what. You can't even make this stuff up. I mean, this has happened so rapidly, and we are looking at, this is so critical. My goodness. And there's an obvious war against Christians, and, I mean, anyone who's a Christian is basically a target right now by DHS and by Muslims. I mean, Christians and Jews right now are really suffering a lot of, we're being targeted. And now, have you seen, by the way, the UN Resolution 1618 here coming up? I believe that refers to the freedom of speech aspect of things here at the United Nations.
Driven by what, Sharia? Or I haven't seen it.
Okay. Maybe I might be wrong about the resolution. What number? I think it's 1618. Any type of speech critical of religion reading.
Oh, okay, yeah. And that's of course being driven by the Muslim Brotherhood and this reforming caliphate. The context of that obviously 100% has to do with Islam. Let's not kid ourselves. It has nothing to do with protecting speech against, Christianity, or excuse me, outlawing speech against Christianity or Judaism or anything like that. Look at the anti-Christian, look at the genocides that are going on in Nigeria, in Egypt. The cops in Egypt have been in a state of genocide since the Arab Spring began in January of 2011. Nothing is said about this. The Maronites in Lebanon, same thing. It's going on all over the world. Not a word is said about any of that. Not a word is said about any of this massive anti-Semitism that you can see on both the extreme left and on the extreme right. Guys, whenever you see anti-Semitism, you run in the opposite direction, because there is no good that ever comes out of that. Now, are there bad Jewish people? Well, of course there are. Are some of these bankster oligarchs Jewish? Absolutely. But that John Corzine is Christian, Hank Paulson is Christian, Tim Geithner is, I should say, ethnically Christian. The problem with anti-Semitism is this. Once you start declaring that a man is not free to choose evil, that a man chooses evil purely because of his genetic constitution, which is what anti-Semitism is, okay, it's saying that Jewish people are prone to choose evil because of their genetic constitution. Once you declare that man is not free to choose evil, the opposite side also holds as well. That also means that man is not free to choose good. And if you condemn one man as being not able to choose good or evil for himself because of the order of his DNA alleles, what you have done is you have reduced the entire human race, every single person, down to an animal. And isn't that exactly what the Marxist oligarchs and the Islamists want? They want everybody to believe that man is an animal that can be treated like an animal, that can be herded like animals, and can be slaughtered like animals. Okay? You take people one at a time, all right? I don't care who your ancestors are. Think about yourself. Does who your great-great-grandfather was have anything to do with the person that you are, the decisions that you make, or the life that you lead? No, of course not. I mean, I am a sovereign person. I am completely free to choose, as is every person on this earth, including every Jewish person on this earth. There are fabulous, fabulous ethnically Jewish people who are doing yeoman's work trying to defend civilization and stand up for the truth and stand up for what's right. Okay, are you going to condemn those people simply because of who their ancestors are? That's abject insanity. That's insanity, because then you're saying that you're every bit as much of an animal as anyone else, because nobody's free to choose. It's all about who your great-great-great-great-grandfather was. Nonsense, nonsense. So when you see that anti-Semitism, either on the extreme left or on the fringe extreme right, it's on both sides.
Oh, yeah.
And you get the hell out of there, because that is bad, bad news.
Yeah, it is.
And unfortunately, with this truth movement and political awakening, there has been so much new technology that leads people to information they never had access to, and people without critical thinking skills who are very gullible and do not, you know, do good research can
mm-hmm.
fall into that trap of looking at the Jewish people as the enemy. And in the Bible, it says in the last days, you know, God said, I will make Israel a burden upon all nations. And this is what we are seeing now. We are seeing in Revelations chapter 3, verse 9, it says, in the last days, the people that call themselves Jews are the synagogue of Satan and are not the true Jewish people. And we are seeing that today, and people are blaming the Jewish people as a whole, and
this
this is what we're seeing.
First of all, how do you know that this is the end times? You don't know that. I would remind everybody of that. That's a very dangerous thing to fall into. And a lot of these so-called rapture type churches, they're telling, oh, don't worry about it. This is the end times. Jesus is going to come back. You don't even need to worry about all this. Bull. Number two, what happens if an honest-to-goodness persecution and hot war against Christians starts and these people start seeing fellow Christians getting slaughtered? You know what's going to happen? They're going to lose their faith. They're going to say, wait a minute, I was told that there was going to be a rapture and Jesus was going to come take care of all of this, and look at all these people getting killed and look at all this suffering, and they're going to lose their faith in our Lord, you see? So preaching that crap about the rapture and end time, this may be, but there's also a real good chance that it isn't, and this is just another period of God's chastisement. Don't think that we're so special here in the United States that if anything bad happens to us, that it must require and necessitate the second coming of our Lord. Oh, please, get over yourself, people, you know? And number two, what was my number two point? What were we talking about? We're talking about Jewish people. You know, if you're talking about Jewish people and just condemning the whole lot of them, you're essentially deflecting all responsibility away from yourself. And I think that's a lot of what it is, Joe. I think that people are trying to find someone to blame. try to find a scapegoat for all this. And the truth of the matter is that, as we were talking about in the first hour, we as a culture are collectively responsible for this, okay? It's all of us. We've all sat by and watched as babies were slaughtered. We've all sat by and watched as our culture degraded, and we kept paying the cable bill, didn't we? And we kept watching that filth on TV, and we didn't put our foot down and say, enough of this. We kept feeding it. We're all to blame. You cannot just point your finger at one ethnic group of people and say, oh, it's all their fault, and I'm as pure as the wind-driven snow. Oh no. This is on all of us collectively. So I think the whole blame the Jews thing is scapegoating. And they say, well, Ann, look at who's running Hollywood. Yeah, I'll grant you that. There's a lot of Jewish people in the entertainment business. But who's paid for all of that crap? Who's enabled all of it over the last 50, 60 years? Who are the people that are paying the cable bill every month and going to these godforsaken movies and buying this godforsaken filthy music? Who's enabling all of that? Okay, you can't just point the fingers at Jewish people in Hollywood and say it's all their fault, because guess what? You're the one that's been buying it, Christian America. So we're all in this together.
No, we are, and I have to tell you that, you know, one thing people don't, I'm not sure people know this, especially particularly about abortion, but our foreign aid is, we give foreign aid to countries, and our foreign aid has a contingency clause in it that they've got, and I'm not exactly certain when this happened, but you've got to be a, essentially you've got to subsidize abortions. You know,
we're
exporting abortions. The bottom line.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's all in terms of what these people are, and this is kind of a good note to wrap things up on, is you look at these people, these psychopathic oligarchs, and you just shake your head and you think to yourself, what do they want? What in the hell does Hillary Clinton want? What does John Corzine want? What does, you know, all of these multi-millionaires? What do they want? If I was John Corzine and I had a net worth of $600 million, man, I'd go buy some property up in the mountains somewhere. I'd build myself a house to live in, and then I'd just chill and leave everybody alone and spend the rest of my life doing, you know, philanthropic projects and stuff like that. That's how most sane people operate. You look at these people like John Corzine, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, certainly a malignant narcissist, just all of these people, and you think, my God, what's the end game for these people? What do they want? I'll tell you what it is. They want to be God. They want to have the power of life and death over other human beings, and there is no amount of money that you can put in front of them that will satisfy them. There's nothing you can put in front of them that will satisfy them until they literally have the power to say who lives and who dies. They just have to mess with people. And I bet in everybody's personal life out there listening, I bet every one of you out there saying, hey, that reminds me of so-and-so. Maybe they aren't a multi-millionaire, and maybe they aren't a government oligarch, certainly, but I bet everybody can think of at least a person, maybe a boss, a coworker, a neighbor, some, or even a family member, who just has to mess with other people, who just has to have control over other people and will never, ever be satisfied. That is who's running the world. That is the psychological profile of people who are elevated up through the political ranks, who are elevated up through the ranks of high finance and corporate America. Psychopaths have been actually recruited, either actively or passively. And if you think about in terms of politics, it's obvious. People email me all the time, ever since I went viral last year, oh my gosh, you have to run for office, you have to run for Congress, you have to run for Senate, you have to run for president, blah, blah, blah. There is no amount of money. There is no amount of money that you could pay me. You know why? Because I'm not a psychopath. And I'm not going to go into what is basically a fraternity of psychopaths. That's what you have to be to aspire to political office anymore in this culture, especially national political office. Can you imagine me in the United States Congress? Can you imagine that? That is a culture of psychopaths and imbeciles. Many of them are both psychopathic and have IQ so low that they couldn't function in the private sector. And I can run off a list of names. Joe Biden is so stupid that he can barely function. Who else? Hank Johnson, Sheila Jackson Lee. I mean, now we're getting into people. We're talking easily people with sub 100 IQs. And they're psychopaths. They have to dominate other human beings. That is the entire class of people that is essentially running the world. It's running the United States. It's running Europe. And that ascends through the ranks in the communist countries and also in Islam. You have to have that psychopathic comportment. Do you see, this just shows you what a miracle the founding of this nation was. And especially I look at someone like Washington, who people were begging Washington to take almost dictatorial power. And he said, absolutely not. I don't want this. I'm just doing this purely out of spirit of service. And he only served two terms. It was Washington who set the unspoken rule that you only serve two terms, and then he walked away. And now, do you understand the monumental task that is before us right now to rebuild this culture, this civilization, this republic? You're going to have to completely drain the entire political class of these psychopaths, and you're going to have to somehow, somewhere, find the decent people in the population of 310 million in the United States who are intelligent, who are honest, and who have integrity, and say, you're going to have to step up even if you don't want to, and you're going to have to provide leadership.
Yeah.
And I can just tell you from my perspective, it's going to be almost impossible because I won't do it. Not. I couldn't even imagine doing it even if things were reformed and good. I'm so averse to that. How are you going to find those people in this degenerated culture in this day and age to rebuild the largest economy and largest military power that has ever existed on Earth? It's daunting.
No, I agree. The upside of you being in Congress, I could, or one of the collateral effects, I'll bet you the ratings for C-SPAN would go through the roof. it would be must-see TV, to coin a phrase. But yeah, you know, it's so, I mean, we're essentially, we as a country, we as even a people, collectively are broken right now.
Now,
you know, but we do know what's promised to us. We do know how this story ends. Now and I would like to say this to people, we as Christians, we cannot give up. We have to fight. I mean, because we're faced with this, doesn't mean that God is going to give us a bye and say, well, you know what? Yeah, you know, we're gonna let you give up. I mean, you believe that. We've got to go down with a fight, do we not? Or, I mean, we have to, it's our duty, I guess, to stay viable, to stay, to look for that, to get through that next checkpoint so we can stay viable for future generations. That might be rose-colored talk, but isn't that our mandate from God?
Well, of course, and that's how civilization has perpetuated for the last X number of thousand years, is that people were willing to lay down their life so that generations forward, people that they would never ever meet or know, would have the chance at peace and freedom. And like St. Paul says, we have to run our race and we have to fight the good fight. So this whole notion of Christian pacifism and just rolling over and turning the other cheek, you know, turning the other cheek applies to if someone insults you personally or something like that. Turning the other cheek does not mean capitulating to satanic evil. And again, that's what the Marxist homosexual infiltrators of the church desperately want people to believe. They want to get them to a point of complete and utter self-loathing. Self-loathing leads to complete self-absorption. self-absorption and self-centeredness pretty much eliminates all courage. You see that? So now we have this nation of people who are self-loathing, who are self-centered, and as a result, we have a nation of men with no courage who will not stand and fight. So that is a big problem, and yes, we have to do whatever we can to raise the alarm, refute the lie of pacifism, and say it is your Christian duty to suit up, boot up, and fight when the forces of evil bring the fight to you. And ladies and gentlemen, let's not make any mistake about this or sugarcoat this. The war has been brought to us. It is on our doorstep. Don't sit around and wait for them to be coming door to door, you know, hauling people out in the street and shooting them in the back of the head, as went on in the early 20th century in Russia and in China and in Cambodia and so forth. You need to get your mind right now. Listen to Solzhenitsyn, who said, if we had just stood and fought at the beginning, early on, we could have derailed the entire Leninist, Stalinist massacre that happened. Those 45 million people that were killed, that all could have been stopped if we had just stood and fought early on. So, yeah, it's important that Christendom get its mind right now. And sometimes I just feel like we're pounding our head against the wall, Doug and Joe, but I guess we're doing what we can.
But if we can save one person or help one person or change one person who, in fact, you know, might be able to change one other person, the butterfly effect, sort of microcosmically anyway. But, you know, it's just, I don't know. We feel that we've got a responsibility to go out and touch as many people as we can, metaphorically speaking, that is. But get the information out there. Anne, can I sneak one phone call in on you here?
Sure.
All right. Let's go to the phones here. 702 area code. You're on with Anne Barnhart.
Hey guys, this is Marco. I was listening to, I didn't get to catch all your show, but when you guys was saying, you know, how could someone like Obama and all these people do what they're doing, well, there's a video out that explains everything, and it's based, you know, the president wrote a book called, or he allegedly wrote a book called Dreams of from my Father.
Right.
Well, there's a gentleman that came out with a video called Dreams from My Real Father, and it explains everything, how Frank Marshall Davis is his father.
Frank Marshall Davis, sure, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, that video is absolutely amazing. It just explains everything in detail.
Yeah, Joel Gilbert wrote that. Joel Gilbert. Anne, did you see that movie or the trailer or the reading?
I haven't seen it, but I think I knew about Frank Marshall Davis, if not in 2008, then pretty early on in 2009, that there was a good chance that he was, in fact, the biological father, and certainly that he was, you know, he was one of the leading communists in the United States, and that he trained Obama in his politics and even set him up and got him going into Chicago. That there's also some speculation off of the fact that one of the poems that Frank Marshall Davis wrote, which Obama actually claimed when he was in Occidental College, that it is possible that Obama was sexually abused by Frank Marshall Davis. There seems to be a veiled reference to oral sex in one of those poems, and it's pretty disgusting. And Frank Marshall Davis was a stone-cold pervert, as many high-level communists are. One of the things that Marxists and other totalitarians try to do is they try to destroy men's spirits through sexual perversion. For example, like in the Black Panthers in the 60s and in the Weather Underground, which was Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, they pushed aggressively mandatory bisexuality for men and women. They would push, and Frank Marshall Davis was a bisexual pornographer and a pedophile. They pushed things like massive promiscuity. For example, the women that got caught up in either the Weather Underground or in the Black Panthers were forced to have sex with every man in the group. There would be orgies and things like that. The reason why communists do things like that is because that's one of the fastest and easiest ways to break a man's spirit and then break his mind, is to get him to where he's participating in sexual deviancy so that he hates himself, and you can just break people almost overnight with that crap. So it's not surprising at all. And again, tying it back to the other political system that's very similar, which is Islam. Rampant man-boy pedophilia, rampant child rape, female mutilation, just disgusting, disgusting sexual practices. Again, the objective of which is to break the spirit of the individual man. So it's not surprising at all. And yeah, Frank Marshall Davis, history will bear out that Frank Marshall Davis has had a profound role and influence in all of this, whether he's the biological father or not. But you look at some of those pictures, and it's pretty compelling. Obama sure does have a lot of those features and a lot of the skin tags and so forth, and the same hairline that Frank Marshall Davis had, and he doesn't look at all like the Kenyan. So
true. Very true. Caller, any question for Ann before we cut you loose?
No, well, just I think you guys are on the right track, and that video is just absolutely amazing. So, you know, I recommend everybody to check it out, and that pretty much explains everything, why everything's going the way it is, and it also tells what they figure his plans are for his reelection. I mean, it's basically to bankrupt this country so it goes to socialism.
Right, exactly. That's the Cloward Piven strategy, you bet.
Right on. Caller, thank you very much.
Thanks, Marco.
Yeah, we got one more call in before the close of the program. Let's try to sneak this one in from the 615 area code. You're on with Ann Barnhart. 615.
Joe and Ann, it is great to be a part of the program. One quick question, Ann. What have the zombies been up to for the last three and a half years? We haven't heard anything out of them about what they're doing. Do you know what's going on behind the scenes?
I missed. Where has who been for the last 3.5 years?
The czars. What are the czars, the unelected, unappointed communist czars for Obama? What have they been doing the last couple of years? Caller, we're going to cut you loose because of the audio. Thank you, man.
I would call it shadow government. Probably, I mean, again, going back to the whole point that Obama himself – slack-jawed, mouth-breathing imbecile, watches ESPN and has sex with his male concubines in the upstairs study all day, every day. Barack Obama is not running the country, okay? So there is definitely a massive shadow government, and I think that a lot of those czars just fit right into that, and, of course, the media covers for all of them. Okay, so the media is never going to report on any of this because the media is a wing. It's an operational arm of the regime. There's no independence there. So it wouldn't surprise me if we find out that a lot of these czars have been very, very active, moving money. You look at the things like the Solyndra and the solar plants and all of these billions and billions of dollars that are being moved and routed out of the government into the hands of these oligarch cronies. Who's covering the logistics of all of that? I think to a large extent it's the shadow government composed of these czars, no question.
Wow. Well, Ann, as always, you've been a very gracious with your time, and certainly the information you've imparted to us and our listeners, unavailable elsewhere. I mean, it's fabulous to hear you.
Yeah, we had about 400 people in our interactive chat listening live who are just giving you praises and compliments for your vast
absolutely.
Knowledge and your strong stance and just the power that they hear come out of you and the conviction. It gives
I'm nothing special, guys. I'm just what every American should be. 60 years ago, I'm completely nominal. It's not that I'm special. It's just that everyone else in the culture has gotten so whipped and is so afraid. And that would be my closing admonition to your listeners is, for the love of God, literally, for the love of God, stop being afraid. If you just stop being afraid, you can change the world.
Amen.
Oh, thank you so much. Ann Barnhart is our guest. Ann, we're going to cut you loose for tonight. God bless you. Thank you so much for being with us. And certainly,
thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right, man. Take care. Folks, that was Ann Barnhart. What a great
Barnhart.biz.
Yeah,
Barnhart.biz. And that is her website. And go on there. Check out her articles. Also, her YouTube channel. She has strong points. What am I saying here? Strong.
She's not afraid to express
right,
her opinion. Let
right.
me tell you. She's a very, very strong lady.
No. And it was just a great show tonight. And we apologize for the audio problems we had at the beginning of the show. Hopefully it did not transfer in the second half as we still had some in our headphones. But, folks, we want to thank you so much for being
right,
with us tonight.
Tomorrow.
Don't miss tomorrow. We're
Stan
Greg
Deo. Or Greg
Evenson.
Greg Evenson.
Tomorrow, Wednesday, will be Stan Deo. So two shows in a row you won't want to miss. Tell your friends and family to tune in. Also, the archive of this show will be available probably, you know, 10, 20 minutes after the show's over.
Give us an hour.
And you can spread this around on Facebook. We'll post it on Facebook and probably put it on YouTube as well, on our Team K9 YouTube channel.
And you know what? Take a second, if you don't mind, and just send Ann a thank you note. Or, you know, or just tell her, you know, how you feel. And you heard her on our show.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that because that's, you know, that's really nice.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, definitely. Folks, we reached the end of the show. We want to wish each and every one of you to have a safe evening. I hope we all see you here tomorrow, God willing. And God bless each and every one of you for everything you do for our show, whether it's prayers, spreading the word, listening, donating. You make a huge difference in our
keeping
lives.
Keeping us on the air, which really we thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Absolutely.
All right, my friend.
God bless all of you. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Good night, everyone.